布谷伦阿亚比亚 ，Australia Laguru 2015。
欢迎来到2050年的澳大利亚。
Welcome to Australia in 2015. In this future, there are three main languages spoken: English, Pitjantjatjara, and Mandarin. And the cultural climate of the country has changed.
This is Yukalara in the future. It's located in southeastern Australia, about an hour from the nearest city. Seven siblings live here on a plot of land that they inherited from their great-grandmother. It's not always easy to live with your family, but they try to get along.
Welcome to Modcast, and in each episode of this series, you'll be introduced to one of the siblings, who each thread a different path for the future. Today, we meet Julia.
Hi, I'm Julia, and I'm preparing for the end of the world, for when the battle for the last packet of biscuits begins. What do you think's worth saving?
I'm Medina Jafari, and I'm your guide to Julia's world. Julia is an 18-year-old training officer at the Defence Force who is driven by the core value of security. With increased hot temperatures, declined rainfalls, bushfire and extinction of species, Julia is concerned that the world is coming to an end. She is seen as overcautious by her other siblings. Is their worry justified, and what will it take to make their version of 2050 a reality? In this episode, we jump into 2050 and ask researchers to come with us and consider the environmental impacts of a vastly changed world. Compared to 2020, the temperature is hotter than ever before. Drought has become common, rainfalls have reduced, winter season has shortened, and our summers are longer than ever. Bushfire is still one of Australia's ongoing concerns, and species have and are becoming more extinct. This is 2050.
It's about 1.5 degrees hotter, and by 2 or 3 degrees hotter in the inland regions than, say, it is in Adelaide or in the coastal areas. And we see many more frequent hot extremes, and we also see major changes in rainfall in 2050. We've got much reduced rainfall in the winter half-year period.
Professor David Caroli is the leader of the Earth Systems and Climate Change Hub working for the CSIRO. He's also a professor at the University of Melbourne. He says reduction in rainfalls and higher temperatures are going to have major impacts on the agricultural productivity of South Australia.
Many of the previously good farming areas have contracted further south towards the coastline, which is still getting enough rainfall. But inland areas aren't getting as much rainfall. It also means that many of our natural ecosystems are being severely stressed.
Julia and the siblings live in Yukalara, a bay located in South Australia. Let's have a look at what their home looks like.
I'd say that South Australia has turned into a complete desert. So whereas we had a coastal fringe that had forests and was quite green for part of the year, that's disappeared, and what was once our red centre has become our red state.
Professor Bob Hill is the director of the Environmental Institute at the University of Adelaide. He deals with issues surrounding climate change, the marine water, conservation of biodiversity, and finding ways to improve it.
Climate change really is just an increase or a change in one direction in all aspects of climate. So it can be temperature, it can be the amount of water available, but it's a prolonged change, which leads to different circumstances at the end of it.
Bob says adaptation will be the biggest challenge Julia's generation has to face.
The extremes of temperature are increasing much more rapidly than anyone expected. So at 2050, we're likely to be dealing with a significant number of days, probably well over 50 degrees. And it's going to be a real challenge to survive in an environment like that with very little water as well.
One of the biggest concerns is the loss of arable land to grow crops on a grand scale. Despite not having adequate land to grow crops, Julia's generation have learned how to produce enough food through intensive agriculture by using the small fertile lands efficiently alongside advanced technologies.
South Australia historically was always very good at growing grain, for instance. That's no longer possible. That land has disappeared from us. So the only way we have agriculture now is if we do it in really intense conditions, undercover, where we control the climate artificially and we bring water in through desalination. So there'll be massive glasshouse complexes where the amount of food produced per cubic metre of space is well in advance of anything that was happening earlier in the century. So we will and are surviving by that strategy, but we no longer have the large broadacre agriculture that we relied on in the past. And similarly in the ocean, aquaculture is much more sophisticated, much more efficient, and we're relying very heavily on that intense kind of food production more than we did in the past on just having an awful lot of land available to us.
I think we should buy the adjoining gully. It has some of the only remaining natural springs. Fresh water's going to be worth its weight in gold.
The Murray-Darling Basin, which reaches through four states of Australia and supports agriculture, cities and environmental flows, has been severely stressed and damaged by these weather changes.
Over-exploitation of water because of the declining amount available has been a major problem in the period in the 2020s and 2030s. And it was only through major revisions of the Murray-Darling Basin plan that Australia was able to address the issues of how to share water in the new climate change affected environment so that we don't overexploit the water. And so that's a really important issue to think is, as the water resources change due to climate change, how can we manage water resources so the natural ecosystems are balanced, so that there is still some water available for agriculture, as well as enough for cities and towns for people to drink.
Water is vital for survival. Despite our rivers becoming saltier, Julia's generation has become much more reliant on using desalination plants to convert salty water into fresh water.
There's plenty of water in the ocean, and we know that with sufficient energy, we can use existing technologies to provide enough water for people to drink and for industry to use, but it may well be much more expensive to desalinize water than to use the natural processes of evaporation from the oceans and then fresh water being collected from rain falling over land.
Faced with climate change, in the years before 2020, Australia needed to move away from fossil fuel to operate the technologies in making fresh water. Otherwise, the climate would have continued to worsen for the next generation.
It needs to be zero carbon energy sources or renewable energy sources, such as wind turbines or solar panels, which can produce sufficient electricity for desalinization plants without adding more carbon dioxide to the atmosphere.
Long before Julia was born, the choice was made and Australia has become a leader in zero carbon energy production.
That transition to zero carbon energy sources was really important to take advantage of the massive renewable energy opportunities that exist in Australia. So we've transitioned away from fossil fuel use and we've become an energy superpower, not in terms of fossil fuels, but an energy superpower in terms of renewable energies. And we're exporting renewable energy generated electricity to Indonesia and other neighbouring countries.
Despite learning how to attain water by using advanced technologies, rural communities across Australia are struggling to survive the ongoing heat.
The lack of rainfall has had a huge impact on rural communities. So the reason to have smaller towns away from the main centre starts to disappear once agriculture begins to fail across quite a lot of the landscape.
Heat will not be the only climactic concern for Julia and their siblings. Some coastal regions like Yucalara will experience increased wet weather and the challenges that arise.
There'll be flooding of coastal systems. There'll be major issues trying to keep sea level at bay.
There was an international agreement made in 2015 in Paris that all nations will try to keep global warming to well below 2 degrees, but not enough was done to maintain this agreement.
Much of the world's population was in denial. They knew that there was a problem, but they really didn't want to believe that it was as bad as everyone was saying. And so they chose politicians and political leaders generally who were great at the denial phase. And we had a spate of leaders across the world, giving people some comfort by making them feel like it wasn't going to be as bad as they thought.
Upon noticing the damage that was happening to the environment, climate change then became an important priority around the world.
The most important decisions that have been made over the last 30 years has been the decisions made by all governments around the world that addressing climate change is not an issue for a single nation, it's an issue for all countries, and the only way we're going to solve climate change on the planet as a whole is if all countries get involved in reducing emissions and not saying that it's dependent upon some other country. Every single country needs to agree to reduce emissions.
Climate change became a prominent issue between 2015 and 2025 when young people voiced their concerns for this earth and foresaw the issues faced by Julia and the siblings.
Their powerful concerns about the future of the country from the 2019 through to 2025 led to a recognition by the Australian government that much stronger action was needed in Australia. And as they started to enter voting age, they started to basically impact the decisions in the country, as well as advocating for stronger action while they were still in school. When they got to voting age, they were a powerful advocacy group impacting on decisions by government.
The message was loud and clear: you're ruining our future. It wasn't about the other species out there or the other ecosystems, it was about a very personal human problem. And that was a wake-up message, I think, that people needed, and it was also a message that people could understand very clearly. So it wasn't a diffuse message, it was a very focused one. It was those young people who first alerted us to just how important this problem was. The challenge for them then was to grow up and solve the problem, because it was too late for their parents to do it.
I'm preparing for the future, for when the battle for the last packet of biscuits begins. Safety is very important to me. That's why I've created this bushfire refuge.
For Julia, the bushfire seasons start early in spring and last right through to the end of autumn. But firefighting technology is keeping up.
All we have now is some new aircraft technologies. We have better drone technologies for pilotless aircraft. We have better ways of lifting water to fight fires by dropping water into the fire region. So we do have some advantages with fighting fires when they're first identified by thermal imaging from satellites and from thermal imaging from drones to allow us to identify where lightning is lighting fires and fighting the fires with some of these new technologies more rapidly. So there are more fires. If they get into the forest, they get more intense. But we've got ways of fighting these fires remotely so that we can protect property and protect people's lives, which are the most important things.
Julia and the siblings love to be out by the beach once in a while, but extreme hot weather has limited their generation from this Australian way of life.
You didn't go to the beach when it was 45 degrees Celsius. It was too bloody hot then, and it will be, unfortunately, more frequent, more common, but still too bloody hot as it is now to go to the beach.
And the reality is, the shoreline that Julia and the siblings know has changed beyond recognition.
The problem will be finding a beach to go to. Because of sea level rise, most of the sandy beaches will be on the way out, if not already gone. So you can find places to go swimming, you just have to clamber through rocks to get there.
But are Julia's concerns over the world coming to an end justified?
The planet will survive what we do to it. It might not look great when we come out, but it's been through major crises before and it's come through. This is a crisis of human making, and its biggest impact in the end will be on human beings. Whether we survive in any fit shape into the future is a really interesting question, but we're not yet at the point where we're putting the entire fate of the planet at risk. We're not quite that bad.
未来取决于今天的选择.
Nyundumba future, banya ngula ngarago joda. Uteringanyi panya ara wiro joda nyundu palyanja kwari jindu nyanganga.
The future will come from the choices made today.
你喜欢这样的未来吗?
Nyundu nyangago mokuringanyi.
Would you like this future? Today's episode was produced by me, Medina Jafari, with series senior producer Sarah Martin. Thanks to Professor David Karoli and Professor Bob Hill for their insights in this episode. To Natalie Kafora, Elke Kleinig, Kristen Alford and Nikki Marcel for their background support and resources. The Seven Siblings from the Future podcast series is supported by MOD at the University of South Australia and is linked to an exhibition on site from November 2019 to May 2020. For more info, go to mod.org.au.